This is Scott Fondas, chief film critic for Variety with the Daily Buzz at Cannes, presented by Sunrider. We're back at the Splendide Hotel for a Hot Topics roundtable on the final weekend of the festival. I'm here with Kenny Turan of the Los Angeles Times and Kyle Buchanan from Vulture. We may at some point be joined by J.D. Yuan of New York Magazine, Kyle's counterpart here at the festival, but we don't know. She's in line at the post office. So we'll just, I'll start as the festival heads into the final hours here, just by asking both of you what your personal highlights have been over the past 10 days and any trends or recurring themes or anything like that that might have stood out for you in the movies that you saw.
I was surprised by what ended up becoming one of my highlights of the festival, which was Mommy, the Xavier Dolan film, seeing as how, what was it, 2 years ago when Lawrence Anyways was here? I walked out of that about halfway through. I couldn't take it. Just the pitch it was at. And I've seen all of his films. Tom at the Farm recently was decent enough for me. But Mommy, I feel like, is finally sort of taming the untamed, or at least him having his Almodovar moment where he learns how to make what's so unique about him and so bright and colorful and sometimes loud and obnoxious and actually put it towards its best use. The performances are fantastic. It's really stuck with me since, and it has this moment of pure cinema where there's a little bit of aspect ratio tomfoolery that had my screening just breaking out into sheer applause, and I found that to be definitely one of the most memorable moments I've had here at the Fest so far. But I know that everyone is not on the same page necessarily when it comes to that.
I'd like to. I prefer to talk about what I liked rather than deal with other films. For me, the film, I think, Foxcatcher was the film that really worked the best for me. I'm interested in Olympic wrestling, so I guess I was kind of a good audience for it. But I think Bennett Miller is really a strong director, really good acting, involving story. I didn't like anything that other people didn't like. I don't have kind of eccentric taste this festival. I like Mr. Turner, the Mike Lee film. I like The Rover, David Michaud. It was a small film. I think it was a runner-up film in certain regard, called Tourist or Force Majeure, which I thought was quite good. And that was, I guess, a surprise for me. I mean, that came in unannounced, unheralded. And I was happy to see that.
Well, I guess for me, the two real standouts in the competition, although I think it was basically a pretty strong competition, were the Turkish film Winter Sleep by Nuri Bilge Ceylan, who's one of the most honored directors in recent Cannes history, and the Russian film Leviathan by Andrei Zyagintsev, who was here a few years ago with a movie called Elena in a certain regard. And I think what... setting aside, the movie's individual merits, what's interesting is that they're both really classical, meaty, narrative films with lots of characters, lots of secondary and tertiary storylines, and sort of political allegory aspect to them. People have invoked Chekhov in reference to both films, and it kind of, in a way, feels like they're cutting against the trend towards very minimalistic, visually driven, at the expense of narrative movies that you were maybe seeing more of in Cannes and in other festivals just a few years ago. I mean, Cannes, I remember famously, there was a movie in a certain regard 5 or 6 years ago that was about two people hanging a hammock in the jungles of Paraguay for 90 minutes. And I actually thought it was an interesting movie, but it seemed to epitomize a trend that was happening, and I'm wondering if you have any thoughts about, do we see a return of classical narrative at Cannes this year?
I don't know. I'm suspicious of trends. I don't know. I mean, people demand them of us, so we come up with them, but I don't know that, I think a trend takes longer than one can to really see.
Well, although I hesitate to call it a trend, but there was an interesting thing that happened with Maps to the Stars and Sils Maria sort of both pivoting on the same plot point, about an actress reaching middle age who's trying to recapture magic with, in the case of Sils Maria, an old production that she's done where she's now playing the older role, and in the case of Maps to the Stars, trying to remake her mother's movie.
Right.
The funny thing to me is I would have thought that Cronenberg's film would have sort of the edge when it depicts Hollywood, And would seem to have a better grip on how things work here. But I actually found that Sils Maria, I just found the Hollywood verisimilitude of that to be more accurate. I don't know, Cronenberg's film felt so out of touch to me, so mid-90s. It didn't really feel like it got the teen characters right, or how Hollywood works correctly to me. So, yeah, I don't know what point I'm trying to make with this, except that we did feel that there was a little bit of a meta thing going on here, especially with all the movies here that are that do star a lot of women in middle age, laudably. There were movies that were actually grappling with that idea.
Well, that's, in a way, a lot of, there's been a lot of discussion about the fact that there's, again, a notable shortage of women directors represented in Cannes. There's only two films in the competition directed by women, and we're recording this before the awards are given out. There's a lot of speculation that one of those films could get a prize just so the jury can be seen to acknowledge the presence of women filmmakers here. But there were a lot of movies with strong roles for women at a time when that's also been a big discussion sparked by Cate Blanchett's speech at the Academy Awards about the dearth of women's roles. But speaking of the two films directed by women, Still the Water by Nomi Kawase and The Wonders by the Italian director Alice Rohrwacher, how did you guys feel about those films?
I think I prefer The Wonders, I think. I'm coming-of-age films. I mean, it's been... I'm a hard sell on coming-of-age films, but there's a nice naturalism there that I enjoy. Kawase, I'm just not on her wavelength, or she's not on my wavelength, but some combination of that.
Yeah, coming-of-age films, I think we've all been to enough film festivals that we've seen probably just about every variation on things like that there are. Although I did want to say that there is sort of an... I hesitate to call it a coming-of-age film, but it's definitely one of the most daring films that I saw this year. Did either of you check out The Tribe? Which won Critics Week?
I didn't see it, but I heard excellent things about it. It's a film, it performed in sign language. Mostly,
it's performed right? Completely in sign language, wow. But with no subtitles. So you are adrift and you become a detective. You are trying to decipher this movie based on what you're seeing and adding context to scenes gone by just how more immersed you become in it and what clues you've picked up in future scenes. It's essentially a movie that's wall-to-wall dialogue. You just don't know what any of it is. And so what you find is it really focuses your attention on everything. It's done in these masterful, long, wide shots, too. So there's a lot of information to take in. And before long, you get to know these characters and their method of signing, whether they do it fast or vigorously or in this sort of lazy way. It becomes almost like an accent that you would hear in a film, and it's incredibly fascinating to watch.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
Sorry, I missed it.
Well, I guess you know, another question in a way is... Is there a certain set of expectations that we as critics go into the competition films with? Because one comment I heard a lot from people about The Wonders in particular was that it was a film that they liked. They thought it had a lot of strong elements, but it didn't seem worthy of the competition. This was, I think, even reiterated in our own review of the film in Variety. And you will hear that said about various films in Cannes, that they didn't seem worthy of the competition. That was said by some people about the Cronenberg. So I guess the question is, what makes a film worthy of the Cannes competition?
You know, if you've been to Cannes long enough, you know that a certain percentage of the films every year are not worthy of the competition. I mean, that's almost a characteristic of part of the Cannes films. I mean, all these selections and all these responses are really, I believe, personal taste. You know, the people who select for the festival like certain things, and maybe there are political factors that compel them one way or another, but no one's ever going to agree with all their choices. I mean, I thought The Rover, which was in a midnight screening, should have been in competition.
I agree.
You know, and but that's just the way it is. I mean, it's a hallmark of Cannes to be dissatisfied with what we're seeing.
It can be a millstone that hangs around the neck of a more mainstream product, I think, where people don't understand why it's here. But I think what people forget, both here and Sundance, because sometimes the Sundance competition movies can be head-scratchers, and often there's a movie that plays much better that's not in competition, is that the festival programmers will look at the competition lineup in total. You know, they will say, we've got this sort of film and we want this to balance it out. So it becomes more about the whole picture than whether the specific movie necessarily is exactly right for that lineup.
Did both of you gentlemen have a chance to see Goodbye to Language, the film of Jean-Luc Godard that sort of created a bit of a frenzy at the midpoint of the festival? Godard's first appearance in the Cannes competition since 2001 with In Praise of Love.
Yeah, no, I saw it. I mean, I just, late Godard, again, I'm not on that wavelength. You know, I am really almost unqualified to talk about it. It's just not the kind of film that I connect to.
I appreciate that he's on a totally different wavelength in his use of 3D, using the left and right, I'm going to get the technical terms wrong, but this sort of stereoscopic nature and having
different images in
different images,
eye, yeah.
And just trying to completely screw with your head. That's something different.
Yeah, I mean, I as a Godard fan, I felt, you know, like many Godard, it's a movie that defies total comprehension on one viewing or probably any number of viewings, but it's so curious to come to a festival like this and, you know, see a film as straightforward and beautifully done as Mr. Turner, for example, that really is not a movie of any gray areas, and then a few days later to see what's basically a completely avant-garde film or you could even say a piece of video art, but presented under the same conditions in the same theater for the same number of people and as part of the same lineup of films.
You know, Cannes likes to cover the waterfront. I think yeah. They'd like to have...
Literally.
Know. Yeah. You know, we also had, you know, The Dragon Part 2, you know. So, you know, they try and have every kind of film here that they can manage.
Of the films that we've seen, do we think that there are any that are... we're still going to be talking about 6 months from now that are movies that are going to be players in people's 10 best lists, Oscar nominations, all of that. That contest that people seem already in May to be kind of hedging their bets on.
I think there's no doubt, at least in our mind, that Foxcatcher will be one of those films. It's really strong work with a whole lot to dig into. And with three very strong central performances, the wealth can be spread. You know, there are a lot of angles on that film. And I hope that people really do appreciate it once it's outside of the imprimatur of Cannes. I felt like it was well received here, but I would have personally thought the reaction would be a little bit more over the moon because I was so enamored of it. But maybe that'll work to its favor. Maybe it won't feel that it's worn out its welcome by the time award season really gets underway.
It's a difficult film. I mean, I agree that I think it's definitely going to be a contender. But, you know, it's a difficult film to sell. It's hard to try and figure out how paying audiences are going to be attracted to this film. Aside maybe from the cast, you know, it's dark subject matter, it's unflinchingly portrayed, and it's going to be a challenge to get people to see it.
I have to say, one of the things that impressed me the most about Foxcatcher was how skillfully the film balances those three characters. I had the impression that it was probably a movie that was quite difficult to get exactly right in the editing room, because even though obviously you have a script, even looking at the finished film, you could see any number of different ways that it could have been arranged, even from what you choose as the entry point. Which character do you start with? Do you start with the murder and then flash back? There's all kinds of permutations there. And I think in the end, they really found a really beautiful and perfect sort of balance for it.
The interesting thing about that is that we were talking to Channing Tatum at a Fox luncheon, Foxcatcher luncheon, earlier this week, and he said that there were several iterations of the film. There was one that he was barely in, there was one that Mark Ruffalo was barely in, and so it really was a thing that evolved over time, and supposedly that's, you know, the film was supposed to come out last year for award season and was delayed. There were two theories on that. One was the official line, that he needed more time to edit it, and the other was that the last season was simply too overstuffed with quality awards products. But I think it's all to the film's favor, you know. It's worked out, and it will have its moment.
Better late than never. We've been joined by J.D. Yuan, back from the post office.
Oh, and, my goodness. It was terrible.
We started out just sort of by talking about our own highlights from the festival,
yeah.
or any trends that we might have noticed in the films. Would you like to speak to that yourself?
Well, I mean... My actual highlight was last night walking out and seeing like the first few scenes of Pulp Fiction on the beach, because it just brought me back to just sort of what made me love movies in the first place. I saw it when I was in high school, and it just completely blew my mind. And I knew all the words from the first couple of scenes, which was just, it was It was a really beautiful moment. I guess I haven't really loved most of the movies I've seen here, which is hard. I felt really horrible saying it, but like How to Train Your Dragon 2 was one of my favorite things I saw at the beginning of the festival, and it was terrible. I think that they're very, most of the things I've seen have been very slow and methodical, sort of building upon each, you know, building, taking one idea and just building it and expanding it. Mm. And I kind of liked last year's Sexier Slate better.
But you liked Party Girl a lot, which is a film we haven't spoken about.
I did like Party Girl a lot. I mean, I don't think it's a huge movie. It's pretty minor, and it's with, I didn't even realize it until after I'd seen the movie that it's all with real people.
Non-professionals.
Yeah, non-professionals, and it actually, the guy, it won Best Ensemble in certain regard.
Yes.
Last night. And the mother, it's about a 60-year-old cabaret girl who gets married, or is going to get married. And the guy who plays her son in the movie is the director. And it's actually his mom, and it's actually her story about getting married at 60.
Yeah.
After a life in nightlife. So, yeah, it was lovely to see it get awarded, because I didn't really think that anybody was paying attention to it.
Well, we should mention, you know, I don't know if people realize, I mean, that, it, you know, there is this section as certain regard to Cannes, which Gilles Jacob, the outgoing president of the festival, very humorously referred to on stage last night as being a title that cannot be pronounced by our foreign friends and that defies translation. But it is a section of the festival that he created during his tenure, and it does seem to puzzle people as to what exactly the difference is between Answers and Regard and the competition, because sometimes directors will turn up in Answers and Regard who've been in the competition, like the Hungarian director Cornel Mundrusko, who made White God, which won Answers and Regard and was definitely one of the most talked about films of the festival. And then you have some younger emerging directors like this trio that made Party Girl. I was very struck in that section by an Australian film called Charlie's Country by the director Rolf de Heer, who was actually born in the Netherlands but has lived most of his life in Australia. And it's a really kind of a valentine to the Aboriginal actor David Gulpilil, who made his debut a little over 40 years ago in Nicholas Roeg's film Walkabout, and has been in many, many Australian films over the decades, including Peter Weir's The Last Wave and Philip Noyce's Rabbit Proof Fence. And this is one of those movies, in a way, like The Straight Story of David Lynch or Clint Eastwood's Gran Torino, where there's a very, very thin line separating the character in the film from the actor playing the role. And it is a kind of road movie, and a lot of it really just consists of these very exquisite close-ups of David Gulpilil's incredibly expressive, weathered face and hands and fingernails. And that was one of the most compelling experiences I had here. I don't know if anybody else had a chance to see the movie. It was presented with a special prize at the Answers and Regard closing for David Gulpilil's performance.
Well, speaking of that sidebar, you know, it's interesting. It's usually... there's usually some sort of a fledgling enfant terrible in that category. This year's would perhaps be Ryan Gosling. But very famously, Xavier Dolan was furious that Lawrence Anyways was consigned to that sidebar a few years ago and refused to show his last film at Cannes. Fortunately, they've patched things up because now he's in the competition. He's got one of the films that is considered to be an awards frontrunner.
But I mean, Beasts of the Southern Wild was in that category, and you know, that did just fine.
Yeah,
but that was a holdover from Sundance.
Yeah, I think if a film's been at Sundance, they usually won't put it in the competition. But I think basically at Cannes, you can see good films in all of the sections, and people who do sort of only focus on the competition are often missing out. A film I would also mention that I think was one of the best films I saw here was a Ukrainian documentary called Maidan, which was shown as an out-of-competition special screening. And it's a movie by the Ukrainian director Sergei Loznitsa, who's been a couple of times in the competition. But this is a documentary about the main square in Kiev that became sort of the locus of the Ukrainian Revolution, which was just happening a few months ago. And amazingly, even though he was filming in the midst of all this chaos, the film is shot in these beautiful locked-down widescreen images that look like landscape paintings, as opposed to the kind of shaky handheld cell phone camera video you usually associate with those kind of documentaries, like a number of documentaries were made about the Arab Spring and the Tahrir Square Revolution and that sort of thing. And that's a film that I think will have quite a long life after the end of this particular camp.
Ukraine is having a moment. They also did The Tribe, the sign language film I mentioned earlier, and that has beautifully composed widescreen photography as well.
A few years ago, everyone was talking about the Romanian New Wave. Maybe we're on the cusp of a Ukrainian New Wave. Uh-huh. And I think with that, we're just about out of time, so I just want to thank all of our guests. Thanks to Sunrider for their support, the Splendide Hotel, where we're recording this broadcast, for their hospitality, Cloud Electronics, and Movie City News. And that's it till next year.